And welcome to The Extra, the show that connects you with the issues, topics, and people that are important to you. And today we're talking about the importance of something that a lot of folks don't want to ever think about. It's planning ahead for when you die. Look at the practical and legal issues and how to prepare your loved ones and what sorts of information you should prepare for them so that they're not left grasping at straws as to where the important documents are or what your wishes might be. We're joined by the founder of Hammond Law Group, Catherine Hammond, who focuses her law group solely on estate planning and elder law. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning, Shannon. So good to be with you on this snowy day.
It's great to have you. We are going to get to all of these issues in just a moment. But first, something that sadly came up in the news, and it involved your law group. And it's just a shocking crime in which scammers took advantage of your group's very good reputation and preyed on at least one elderly victim to the tune of a loss of $8,000 by impersonating your law group. Tell us, first of all, when you first heard that this was involving your law group's, someone impersonating your law group and your law firm, I mean, what were the first thoughts that went through your head?
Oh my goodness. I think there wasn't even a thought. It was just a feeling like somebody had stabbed me in the heart, because we spend all of our waking hours trying to protect people from things like this. We do workshops for our clients where we have police come in and teach about scams. We try to help people avoid this kind of thing. And so for somebody to take our name and use our name to take money from somebody broke my heart. And I actually, I had a phone call with the victim the day that I found out. And when he told me about how hard this was for him mentally, how much of a fool he felt like, it was difficult, because it is what we spend our lives trying to fight against. And it renews our commitment and reminds me why we spend so much time and energy doing the right thing and helping people understand how to identify if this is the right thing or if this is some sort of a scam. Because there are estate planning scams, there are probate scams like this one where this gentleman was told that there was some sort of an inheritance and a package, and if he just paid this money, then he would get this valuable package. So it reminds me why what we do is important.
Oh, and so this crook not only violated this victim in a financial and legal sense, also violated, the good name and reputation that you've established over the years. And once again, the Colorado Springs Police issuing an alert. Anyone who asks for payment in gift cards is likely a crook. So there's an easy way to solve any questions that you might have. I'm guessing that this victim was provided with phony documents that purported to represent your firm. But there's an easy way. Just look it up on Google or in the Yellow Pages or what have you, and call your law group, Catherine, because I'm sure you would have been able to straighten them out right away.
Absolutely. And that's how we identified this in the end. When he wasn't getting the package, he did finally call us up. And so you just named the two principles to keep people safe from this particular type of scam. One is never give money or gift cards in advance of anything. And the second is, if there's something that you're not expecting, like an unexpected inheritance, something along those lines, call the lawyer or law firm or whoever it is who's purporting to offer this to you and speak to them directly. Get their contact information from a reliable source, maybe their website on the internet, rather than just from what happened in this case. The victim was given fake Hammond Law Group letterhead, and signatures by a lawyer and a supposed chief judge of Hammond Law Group that obviously doesn't exist. You don't have a chief law or a chief judge or any kind of a judge within a law firm. So, so check those things out separately so that you don't have to be taken by this kind of a horrible scam.
Right, because likely if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. Although I do have to say, Catherine, one time I did get notification that our family had been told that we were going to be getting a child because there was a long lost relative and who had had parents that unfortunately couldn't care for the child, and I thought this is too good to be true because I would have loved another baby, but it was actually the truth. But I did go to the source, went all the way to the state authorities. As it turned out, the child ended up with another relative. But that is good, and you know. But it just goes to show you that you really have to go to the authorities. You have to make sure that you are tracking these things because if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is going to be. But
this kind of scam has been around forever. You just reminded me of a story. When I was a very little girl, my mother received a phone call, supposedly from the police, saying that I had been in an accident. And I was standing right there in the kitchen with her. And it was somebody who was, I don't know exactly what they were trying to do, but she hung up on them immediately. So scams have been around forever. People are just getting more creative. It evolves. And now with the digital world, it's even more common.
Right, right. And you touched on your relationship with your mom. I'd like to let our listeners know that background with your mom is something that has really informed your entire career and the mission that you have to help others. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So as many of your listeners know, Shannon, I started in this business on the other side of the conference room table in a lawyer's office. My mother had early onset Alzheimer's. She thought that she had it when I was a young adolescent. She was officially diagnosed with it when I was still in my teens, and I became her conservator and guardian at age 22. And so I got familiar with the way that the legal system works in the event of disability and at the time of death from going through those experiences myself. And that I had a wonderful lawyer who held my hand and walked me through the process. And that was my inspiration for going to law school so that I could help other people avoid some of the hassles, the headaches, the heartaches that come with the default way to navigate the system. When people do it with intentionality, you mentioned at the beginning, nobody wants to think about dying, but most people that we talk to have spent their entire lives protecting and providing for their loved ones. Mm-hmm. And so you don't want to drop that when you die. It's just continuing that through the end of your life, that same thing that you've been doing your whole lifetime.
Right, right. And I bring a little bit of personal baggage to this conversation because my lovely parents, spent their entire lives building up their small little estate, but their estate in hopes of being able to pass it along. And sadly, because of a lack of preparation and having those conversations, sadly, it all went to a nursing home and has not resulted in, it has ended up bankrupting, essentially, my parents. So because of the lack of planning, I guess I should say, even though, I would assume that my parents thought they were doing all the right things. So this is where we're leading to. Catherine Hammond, for a long time, hosted a weekly show here on KRDO News Radio. We're going to talk about the conversations that you ought to be having, especially during this time of pandemic, when we are looking at more than 420,000 unexpected deaths due to COVID-19, a disease that had never before existed prior to roughly a year and a couple months ago. these deaths have come to families at a time when they were not expecting it. So conversations need to be had. Conversations can be uncomfortable. We're going to be talking with Catherine Hammond about that subject when we continue this discussion here on The Extra on KRDO News Radio. And we're continuing our discussion here on The Extra with Catherine Hammond, founder of the Hammond Law Group. And Catherine, I guess the statistics really point to why we should all pay attention when we're discussing, you know, how to be making plans for when we die. Why don't you tell us about those statistics?
Right. No kidding. Well, statistics show that 100% of people from every previous generation has died. Every single person who's come before us has died. So we know exactly.
It's a little humor because, of course, nobody is live forever. Right, right, right.
Other than a couple of folks who in the Bible made an exit without dying. But that's just not the norm.
So, no.
we know what's coming. We know that we're going to die, but we try not to admit it. And we already talked about the fact that, you know, people spend their entire lives, your parents did, working to protect you and provide for you. And then due to a lack of information and action, end up losing everything or putting their family through completely unnecessary headaches and heartaches. So
Right. Because there are certain things that need to happen when someone passes away, or even when they get close to being incapacitated, to make decisions for themselves, because they're kind of hand in hand, kind of the same thing.
Absolutely. And I, for the purposes of today's conversation, am kind of thinking about things in four different categories. There are four types of things that need to happen when you die. Some of them are physical, some of them are tangible, some of them are financial, and some of them are legal.
Mm. So let's tackle the first one, the physical. What do you mean by that?
So I mean taking care, excuse me, of your physical body, your earth suit, as we call it, the body that we go through this life with. And so when this life comes to an end, there are certain things that need to happen. Excuse me. One of them is taking care of your body itself. Do you want to be buried or do you want to be cremated? Making sure that your wishes are known about that, making sure that there's somebody who can do whatever it is that you want to have happen. So there's the burial or cremation, there's the memorial service. For most people, the memorial service is an important part of the grieving process. Every once in a while, I have a client who says, I really don't want a memorial service when I die.
Right.
I don't want people to gather in that kind of way. And I always, I push back. And yes, they have the ability to make that decision. And yet, what a lot of people don't realize is that the memorial service is not about you. It's about creating a space where your family can grieve. And it's the grieving process that's important. So I push back on people when they go into it with that thought, just to make sure that's what they really want, that they don't want their loved ones to have that kind of a space.
Right. I can weigh in on that. My father apparently did express he didn't want a memorial service. And then after he passed, we did not have one. Months later, it was clear there were so many people calling and contacting saying, when's the memorial service? We really want a chance to share our memories of him. And we did have one. And it was a four-hour event, and it was just so special that everyone had such special memories and could share them in that way. So I agree with you. It is, in a lot of ways, it is for those who are left behind.
Right. A four-hour service says something about the kind of man that your father was.
Oh, we like to think so.
And I have to believe that he would be perfectly happy with you having that space to come together and grieve and honor his life,
right.
Even though he didn't realize that he would have wanted that.
And this time of taking care of, though, the physical things, planning ahead for the physical, it does bring with it challenges, though, right, Catherine?
Absolutely. I mean, the biggest challenge is that when you die, if you haven't expressed exactly what you want, your family has to immediately decide as soon as you die what's going to happen. So they have to make a decision about burial or cremation. They have to make all kinds of little decisions related to that. They have to make decisions about what's going to go into the obituary. They have to figure out how to pay for your final expenses. And a lot of people think, well, if I have money in a bank account, then my family can just use that money to pay for my burial or cremation and funeral, which is not correct. Nobody can get into your bank account, even if you have a beneficiary on it. Nobody can get into that until we have a death certificate. And it can take weeks to get a death certificate, and I'll guarantee the funeral home will not wait weeks to be paid. They want to be paid today. And so making sure that you have a plan in place to make money available so that your family, and I've dealt with families who've been in this kind of a pickle where somebody dies and they don't have money available, they don't have a credit card available, and they can't figure out what to do. That's a completely unnecessary stress. And then there's the family fighting. Maybe one person thinks you wanted to be buried, another person thinks you wanted to be cremated, one person thinks you should be buried here, another person thinks you should be buried here, all kinds of things. When my mom died, my siblings and I navigated it, I think, very gracefully, and still we had differences of opinions about where her ashes should go. And so I ended up going along with what my siblings wanted. And then about a week later, put her ashes in a place in the mountains. And I ended up going back a week later because there was someplace else that was really special to her. And I got a little bit of the ashes and I took them over to the other place because I thought that was what she would want. And so I was able to avoid making it an issue with my siblings, even though we had different ideas about things. So.
But you could see how that could become, instead of a small issue, a big issue if you're not planning ahead, because your mom and others who pass away can leave those directives and settle the issue, settle the question once and for all, but do it in a legal way. We're talking with Catherine Hammond, who is the founder of the Hammond Law Group, and she's talking to us about issues and decisions that people probably need to be thinking about to plan for when they die. And it's a depressing thought. We don't like to think about death. We don't like to think about our own deaths. But as a way of caring about those around you, planning ahead is one way to help them avoid such difficult challenges, decisions, and issues. So we're going to continue the discussion with Catherine after these messages. And welcome back to The Extra, the show that connects you with the issues, people, and topics that are important to you. And today we're talking about, you know, setting up a checklist, what to do when a loved one dies, or how to prepare for the possibility of your death. And we're talking with the founder of Hammond Law Group, Catherine Hammond. And before we continue with our discussion, just want to tell you about a couple of webinars that Catherine's group is holding. One is today at 2 p.m. Another is coming up on March 3rd. That is at 2 p.m. Is that correct? Are those the correct dates, Catherine?
Those are the correct dates. So okay. We have one today, Tuesday, the 26th of January, and one next Wednesday, the 3rd of February.
Not March 3rd, the 3rd of February. Okay. So if you would like to, if you would like to register, you can do so online at coloradoestateplan.com or give a call to her office. The number for that is, Catherine?
It's 719-520-1474. Or you can go to coloradoestateplan.com.
Okay, let's talk about now planning for the tangible, because this is what I think a lot of people think about when it comes to estate planning, property and belongings. Tell us about what kind of things people need to be planning for and what kind of challenges exist.
Right. So the types of things that you need to be planning for with your property and belongings are, first of all, the big stuff, your real estate, if you own any real estate. So that would be your house, if you have any rental properties, if you have any timeshares or mineral interests or things like that. All of those need some sort of a plan, because when you die, that real estate will have to go through a legal process in order to get to the person that you want. Or if you own it in joint tenancy with somebody, it will by default go to the joint owner that you have. So you need to have some sort of a plan for your real estate, as well as your personal property. So that's your furniture, your car, your antiques, your jewelry, your gun collection. All of those things have to go somewhere. And the question is, how is it that they go somewhere? People are always interested in finding out, like, what happens next when my loved one just died? How does this stuff get where it's going? Well, it goes there either through the probate process or through joint ownership. And so, as I mentioned with real estate, if it's not owned jointly with somebody else, it has to go through probate when you die. So if you do own it jointly, let's say with a spouse, once both of you have died, then it still has to go through probate. So typically there's a probate involved, and we'll touch on exactly what that looks like in just a minute. But even if there's not a probate, there the assets, let's say the tangible personal property, have to go to somebody. And so the most important thing is to start with your wishes. Who do you want to receive your real estate? Who do you want to receive your personal property? For real estate, if you're married, probably you want it to go to your spouse, but not always. People in a blended family might want that house to end up going to their children down the road, but they don't want their current spouse to be kicked out immediately when they die. And so we have to navigate all of the issues there. Or maybe your children are minors and not old enough to inherit. So we need to take a look at what you're wanting to have happen, and then, given the circumstances in your world, make a plan to have that happen effectively.
Right, because we've seen that with celebrities, is sometimes is the direct descendants of the person don't end up with anything because the celebrity had remarried, and so that person ended up with the bulk of the estate because they hadn't been planning, I guess.
Yeah, and that happens really frequently. I've had so many people tell me that they were completely disinherited when their parent died because of that kind of a situation.
Because of a remarriage. Okay. And so so that takes care of the tangible property, but still a lot of people, meanwhile, have a lot of financial both debits and credits that need to be dealt with when they die. Tell us a little bit about what are the considerations.
Right. Well, one of the big ones is there are bills that need to be paid. How do I pay those? And paying those bills means you have to get the authority to get access to your loved one's bank account. And you can't even typically speak to the cable company when somebody dies. If the cable bill was in their name, not in your name, they won't speak to you. So there are a lot of little challenges related to how to get money or how to find out what money is owed that we can help you navigate depending on the situation, and then figuring out what needs to be paid. Typically, whatever bills there are when your loved one dies need to be paid, and yet there are some bills that may not need to be paid. And I mean, one tiny little thing with credit card accounts. If a credit card account was just in your loved one's name and they die, typically the credit card company will do some negotiating with you and you may not have to pay that entire bill. And there are all kinds of other situations where there are bills that might be questionable. And so working with a probate attorney, whether there's a probate or not, a probate attorney can guide you through all of that.
I've often wondered about cars because, a car, you may have a car that you've owned for, say, a year. And if someone dies, I mean, you know, that's really more of a liability. It'd be like, you take the car, nobody's going to want the car because you still owe more on the car than probably the car is worth at that point.
Right. So you might want to just give it back to the bank in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is, you know, a question of the exact circumstances and what your loved ones want to do in that situation. In Colorado, there's a DMV form that you can fill out if you want to keep the car. There's an easy DMV form that can be filled out to make a transfer of ownership pretty easy when somebody passes away. Mm-hmm. But if there's a big debt on the car, it may not be worthwhile.
Okay, let's talk bank accounts, because that is something that is, I've heard, crop up in situations where someone has passed away, you know, especially if they don't have someone who is a signatory on the bank account. You know, technically, right, they can't access that, right?
Exactly. If you didn't have a joint owner on the account when you died, and I don't recommend having a joint owner because then the money gets lost if they get sued or divorced or anything like that, I don't recommend joint owners. If you don't have a joint owner, then the bank account is frozen when you die. That happens automatically. It's tied to your Social Security number. And so there's no way to get into the account, even if you're the beneficiary on that account. And a lot of accounts have named beneficiaries. You can't get in until there's a death certificate. So you have to wait a few weeks to be able to access that. If there's not a beneficiary on the account, then the money is going to go according to whatever estate plan you have. So if you have a will in place, then the will determines who's going to get that money. If you don't have a will in place, then the state determines who's going to get that money. And how much money and property you have is going to determine how you get access to that money. So it might have to go through a probate, which is in Colorado a 9 to 24 month process.
Oh, boy.
It's some hassle. Yeah, it takes a while to go through a full probate. And there's some cost involved in that. So if it has to go through probate, it can take a little bit longer, and you might have to pay some money in order to be able to get that. Now, retirement plans, on the other hand, typically have beneficiaries named.
Right.
And so once mm-hmm. there's a death certificate, typically your beneficiaries that are named on your retirement plans can get access to those dollars. And then they have a variety of ways where they might be able to take the money out. These days, even with any kind of an IRA or similar plan, your beneficiaries have to take the money out within 10 years of your death. That's a change that just happened a year ago. So typically, if there's any substantial money in that retirement account, it's going to be better for your beneficiaries to take that money out over those 10 years instead of all at once for tax reasons. But talk to a good financial advisor and make sure that you're doing it in the way that's most tax efficient so that you don't end up giving some of your money away to the IRS that you didn't have to give to them.
Right. And again, planning ahead, because for folks like myself, I've moved around in a bunch of different jobs and a bunch of different employers and have a bunch of different retirement plans floating around out there. I know them all, kind of. But, you know, I mean, my beneficiaries, my heirs may not. And so it's, like you said, important to set up a plan. We're going to be talking about the challenges that face folks when setting up for their financial hereafter. what happens to their finances after you're gone, with Catherine Hammond, the founder of the Hammond Law Group. We're also going to be talking about the legal challenges. And we're really just scratching the surface. Would really recommend that you check out some of the webinars that the Hammond Law Group sets up. We're going to give you the details on those again in our next segment. We need to take a short break. You're listening to The Extra. Welcome back to The Extra, the show that brings you the issues, topics, and people that are important to you. And we've been talking about the issue of what happens when you die, looking at the practical and legal issues, how to prepare your loved ones, how to make sure that your loved ones are taken care of with just taking care of the estate that you have. We're not talking about some pie in the sky preparations. We're talking about making sure that what you have, your property, your belongings, your finances are taken care of after you pass away. Catherine Hammond, we're going to be talking about those webinars in a little bit. But as we're looking at we were talking about the financial aspects of this. The challenges, what kind of challenges do people face? I'm guessing that there are a multitude.
Oh my gosh, there are. And it feels exaggerated in the moment when you've just lost a loved one because
sure.
you have mm-hmm. all of the grief and the shock going mm-hmm. on. And then you don't have money available to take care of the things that you need for the funeral or to pay the bills. That lack of available funds is a huge one. Not being able to access the money or to pay the bills is exceptionally stressful in that moment. A lot of people, and we talked about this already, accidentally disinherit their loved ones. If you get remarried and put everything into joint tenancy with your new spouse, then you disinherit your previous children. That one happens regularly. And there are a number of situations where you can leave money or assets to loved ones, and that money becomes the cause of some problems. If you have disabled loved ones who are on SSI or Medicaid, they lose all of their government benefits. We have to plan special way for them.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our beneficiaries are not ready for a big chunk of money, and people don't realize this. You know, if you have let's say a $500,000 house and maybe $500,000 in life insurance and retirement plans, and you die with two kids, you're giving each of them $500,000 all at once. Now, if your kids are 22 and 24, probably they've never had $500,000 before. And probably they're going to spend some of that money in a way that 5 years later they're going to really regret. Because they didn't have the wisdom yet to know how to use $500,000.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's really important to have a conversation with your attorney about what you're trying to accomplish in the lives of your loved ones and whether maybe staggering out the distributions over time might be better. And then there's the problem of future divorces for your beneficiaries. If I leave money to I have two daughters, they're both happily married, but let's say I leave money to my two daughters when I die, and one of them, husband hits his head a year later and runs off with the next door neighbor, he typically gets to run off with half of the inheritance that I left for that daughter. It's very easy to make sure that that doesn't happen, but that has to be part of your estate plan. If you just leave money outright to your children, it typically gets split in any future divorce. And most of our clients are not interested in funding a future ex son or daughter.
Right. Even if we never met them. Right. Correct. And we don't have time. We have about 1 minute left. So let's just, can you just real quickly run down some of the legal issues that people need to consider? We won't be able to go in depth with any of them, but yeah. We're going to give a plug for your webinars. So why don't you run down those?
Yes, the webinars are a great place to find out about the legal side of this. There's probate, how you get there, what is it? Most people don't enjoy probate. Most people, when they find out what it is, don't want to have to put their family through that. But it's not a horrible monster in Colorado. If you have a trust, there are some things that need to happen with that. The biggest challenges that we see for people in the legal area are keeping the government out of my business, the money that we have to spend on that, the family fights, not knowing what to do, and just the emotional burden of all of that. So yes, we have webinars, as you mentioned, this afternoon at 2:00 and next Wednesday at 2:00 as well. And we also have a download on our website. If you go to coloradoestateplan.com, under the resources section, there is a free downloads button. We have a resource that says what to do when a loved one dies, which is a really comprehensive checklist that I just put together a couple of months ago to be helpful to you, the public. When you have a loved one who dies, it goes through all of this and so much more, all of the little details to help you navigate the little practical things that have to be taken care of.
Well, Catherine, I'm going to go there and download that right now, because through our discussion, I've discovered many areas of my planning that are lacking. So we appreciate your time, as always. Catherine Hammond, who hosted a radio show here in KRDO News Radio for many years, we appreciate you and the information you're sharing with our listeners. And we would encourage people to check out their website. It is HammondLaw.com. Is that correct, Catherine?
It is ColoradoEstatePlan.com.
Excuse me, I did not get that correct. ColoradoEstatePlan.com. You can also give them a call in Colorado Springs, 520-1474. And you also have a Denver phone number as well, 736-6060-303 area code if anyone is living in that area. Catherine, thank you again for sharing your expertise with our listeners on The Extra.
Always a joy to be with you.